Welcome to the Esports Business Network podcast. I'm your host, Trent Knox. I'm the founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. This is episode number 22 of the EBNP. Our guest is Cam Adair, the founder of Game Quitters and the director of research and development at Intenta. Cam Adair is a renowned public speaker in the mental health awareness space around gaming and esports, specializing in topic of addiction as it pertains to video games. In this podcast, we discuss the reason why he established Game Quitters, what behaviors may signify someone is struggling with video game addiction, and some of the deeper and darker problems facing esports. Enjoy.
This is the future. Evolution. This is the future.
Hey, y'all, it's Trent Knox with the Esports Business Network podcast. Today, my guest is Cam Adair of Game Quitters. Welcome to the show, Cam.
Hey, Trent. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, I came across your content, I believe, on YouTube, and it's been in the conversation a little bit that we mentioned off air with mental health and healthy gamer and another couple of people out of the Canada area. I had another guest on the show, Landon Gorbanko, on talking about how to talk about mental health and just like your psychology pertaining to gaming, esports, nerd culture, all kinds of different things. And I felt like when I came across your information that I need to get that other perspective and provide that and do my due diligence in a way for my audience. Because there are younger individuals who haven't experienced the burnout in esports. But before we really dive into it, I'd like to get to know you a little bit better. I'd like everyone to kind of get to know you a little bit better. But we spoke a little bit. You said that you Game Quitters really came to fruition in 2011. But before that, were you a gamer yourself?
Absolutely. I grew up playing video games. I'm 32 years old, and I think that's an interesting age because it puts me at the really birth of online competitive gaming. Because when I was, 11, 12 years old, that's really when we got high speed internet and online gaming came in. And for me, that was just like the best thing ever. I was a high level hockey player in Canada, high level athlete, but gaming was kind of what I did with all the rest of my time. And when hockey was no longer really a big focus of mine, as I transitioned in high school, gaming consumed all the rest of my time. And, I identify as a hardcore gamer. I was playing up to 16 hours a day, all day, every day. I dropped out of high school. I never went to college. And, gaming was really the thing that I desired to do the most out of anything in the world.
That's an interesting story. And I think the controversial subject that we're going to be talking about is, not in this podcast, it's not going to be whether esports is a sport or not. This controversial subject matter is going to be more along the lines of if gaming can be an addiction, right? And in the form, the big conversation in esports is essentially like burnout, like spending so much time that you lose a sense of personal skills. These things get neglected. So maybe we jump in like and just go at it with, why did you start Game Quitters?
I started Game Quitters because I went through the journey myself of really struggling to quit gaming. And really, gaming became the all-encompassing priority of my life. And I had a huge passion for gaming. I think it's very important to recognize that. I also think it's very important to acknowledge that personally, I'm not against gaming. I don't think that all gaming is bad. And the question of whether or not it can be an addiction, I think is the crucial point of it can be an addiction. That doesn't mean it is an addiction, and certainly not for everybody, but maybe a small percentage of people do lose control and do really struggle to stop and do experience a lot of negative impact to their life and yet continue to game excessively despite all of it. And that was certainly me. I was pretending to have jobs and deceiving my family. I dropped out of school. I had no motivation or desire to get a job or to, you know, continue my education. But yet I wanted to play video games 16 hours a day. I didn't care that I was losing relationships. I didn't care that I was in conflict with my family very intensely, constantly. I didn't care about any of those things because I just wanted to play video games 16 hours a day to the detriment in my life. And for me, there was no ability to control gaming. It was all day, every day, and no amount was ever enough. So for me, it became a struggle, and it reached a point where I had hit rock bottom. I wrote a suicide note, and I was very serious about following through with that. I was very fortunate that that night I was able to kind of connect with a couple of friends who helped me see a different perspective and really saved my life. I started working with a counselor and turned things around. And during that time, as I began to kind of recover my life back into balance, I started looking for help online around this subject. And I just didn't find anything that was actually useful. I found sort of articles that were written for SEO purposes. They were written for Google. They weren't written to actually help someone who was struggling with the issue. And after sharing my story, I just kind of felt inspired to do it. I started to hear from tens of thousands of people all over the world who were gamers themselves, who were looking to stop or reduce their gaming. And we all just kind of banded together and to support each other. And it was never about saying that gaming is wrong or bad or any of this. It was just someone wanted to stop. They were struggling to. How could we all support each other to do that? And that's really what spawned Game Quitters to become a website, a forum, a platform of resources to help others do the same. And it's just kind of continued to grow from there.
I'm really fascinated by the way that you've gone about this process, because not every person that looks or shines a negative, not necessarily, this isn't that negative, but the people who intentionally shine negative light on gaming and the activity of gaming don't generally come from a gaming childhood or growing up there. They look at it as an action or behavior of lethargy, and unfortunately that makes it very hard for people like myself or anyone that plays games to see what actions can you replace or what actions can you do to replace over gaming or spending time gaming when you should be taking care of other responsibilities or other accountability things that you need to be accountable for.
Exactly. And I think that an important insight maybe I can share or perspective that I have is that the gaming community has been under attack for a really long time. Gamers have felt under attack, especially in the 90s when, especially in the US, school shootings were sort of the buzz, and really the target ended up being video games. Video game violence, playing games is going to turn you into the next school shooter, and these sorts of narratives were all over the media. And still, even to this day, if there is a school shooting that gets attention in the national media, gaming all of a sudden becomes a topic of conversation. And the research on it's been very inconclusive overall at best. And it's kind of caused a lot of stigma to be felt by the gaming community. Gamers have also been under attack by parents and just older generations that gaming makes you lazy. Gaming is a waste of your potential. Why do you play all these video games? Those aren't your real friends. Yet the experiences of gamers when you're playing is kind of the opposite. You're focusing on mastery. You're trying to improve your skill. You are connecting deeply with people all over the world who you very much view as your friends, if not your only friends. Often you feel like you're realizing your potential. You feel like you're really good at something. You feel a sense of confidence. If anything, you're developing more empathy for different cultures or different backgrounds, different people. Gaming obviously has a toxicity problem, but it's a bit of a different topic. And the contrast between how you experience gaming and how the world has typically viewed gaming is very different. And I think that defensiveness is natural, and even in some cases, it's valid. However, when it comes to the gaming addiction or excessive gaming conversation, I think that defensiveness is coming from that same place. Even though, ironically, every gamer knows someone who plays too much. Like, it's not like that's a big secret in the gaming community. I played 16 hours a day. Of course, other gamer friends knew I played too much or knew that, you know, my life wasn't in a very good place. Now, there could be a debate about, you know, whether gaming was helping me deal with some of those things or escape from some of those things. In some regard, gaming can be a positive force for that. But in another regard, it can be a detriment. And I think it's that natural defensiveness of gamers that is valid or has come from a valid place that is a barrier now for us in this conversation of how can we ensure that gaming is a productive and healthy aspect of our life that's remaining in balance and it's not moving in a direction of causing problems.
Yeah, and I want to, you know, roll with what something you said and segue off of it. You brought up toxicity in gaming. So my question for you is, from your research and what you've found by talking with experts, what is the biggest impact as far as developing behavior? So when this really comes into question is generally when parents are observing their children and the behaviors they exhibit in public, right? That's generally what we see. So when and this also ties in issues with people on the spectrum and people who have a deeper rooted psychological needs, right? And so for that, is it a matter of experience, lived experience, the behavior, or is it a matter of genetics? Is it a genetic tie-in? What is this? What kind of studies are out there about this?
Yeah, I haven't really studied that topic in depth, mm-hmm. other than sort of my own experience of, like, I played video games, and even recently, as last year, I did a 6-month experiment to go back and game and do it in moderation and kind of experience like a very specific structure of how do I maintain balance with gaming without it becoming a problem. And I played CSGO for 6 months. And as an experience, it was difficult to feel like the game was as much fun as it once was, because it was just not as much fun having people being toxic in the game towards you. And I guess growing up, when I was maybe used to that culture, or I had grown up in that culture, it certainly didn't affect me as much when I was younger and, you know, gaming was what I did. But now, having been away from it for a period of time, going back into it was just like, it ruined the experience for me. And obviously some games are worse than others. Call of Duty and CS are kind of notorious, and League of Legends, of course. But I think an aspect of it certainly is, developmentally, a lot of kids are growing up in that sort of internet culture. And it's very easy. You're anonymous, right? It's very easy to lash out or to express your emotions in certain ways. And the culture up until this point hasn't really been one that has nurtured an empathetic viewpoint. It's kind of been the wild, wild west. I do believe that's shifting quite a bit. Even this week, Xbox, Nintendo, and PlayStation announced their Safer Gaming campaign. And one of, you know, the aspects is around prevention of, you know, harm. And a big aspect, I believe, that they are going to focus with that campaign is around getting rid of harassment and toxicity in games, or reducing it significantly. And how they go about that's going to be interesting. But I certainly think that as we go forward, there's going to be a much more concerted effort by the industry to develop a better culture in their communities, because toxicity, whether it's in games or it's just on the internet, is certainly a problem, and certainly is impacting people's mental health.
It's interesting example there. My fear with those things goes into a larger societal issue we have with censorship, but I do have a positive outlook toward some of these new trust and safety policies that are being adjusted or changed to fit a new lexicon or verbiage that comes from the Zoomer generation or the Gen Zers. And as I think there's a really, really popular meme going around right now. It started, I think, on TikTok, of a little girl telling her dad, "I told you I was playing video games." And the dad, and this is where it becomes really interesting, the dad chooses to punch the television out instead of talking with his daughter and helping condition her to exhibit the right behaviors. Rather, the approach seems to be this sort of I'm gonna use the term egalitarian, but that's not necessarily what it's just this. The judgments this place seem to be coming from an area which they're not as well versed to handle the issues, and so that's why I want to have someone with your sort of knowledge and your experience to talk about this subject, because I think a lot of people are being negligent about not reading into to what are the proper behaviors to mitigate over gaming? What are the proper behaviors to exhibit when you're trying to reach out to someone, say, "Hey, you might be gaming too much."
Yeah, it's challenging. It's really tough. And I think that it's important for us to acknowledge that gaming as a medium is evolving very rapidly. The games are changing. A good example would be Fortnite, and sort of how Fortnite has instituted different game features and dynamics that, you know, were typically in different types of games, but they've kind of merged them, right? Or even Fortnite now pursuing more of a like games as a social network type model instead of just as a video game. And you're seeing a lot of that with the concerts and the in-game events. And I think with games evolving so quickly, we run into a couple different challenges. Number one is the difficulty that parents or professionals have staying on top of, like, what are these games? How do they function? And how do we keep our kids safe if they're engaging in them? Because even loot boxes, as another example, that wasn't a very popular mechanism only a couple years ago. And now it's a prolific feature in most games. And it has, research now shows, some risks associated with it, but research also is going to take a couple of years to catch up with it. And so it's like a full-time job for parents to stay on top of how games work and how they change. Number two, games are designed as experiences that are almost significantly better than what you can experience in quote-unquote real life. You get a heightened level of stimulation. The stimulation is digital. You have basically unlimited amount of it that you can consume. How many hours in the day do you have? And you know, there's a game that can consume all of it. They're now social and kind of third place or second life type experiences. And so compared to, I mean, even right now in this room I'm in, it's not very stimulating. But if I turned the video game on and I had zombies coming at me and loud noises and, you know, explosions and people screaming in my ear and scores flashing across the screen, it's a very different level of stimulation. So the more you're engaging in that, the more you're getting used to that heightened level of stimulation. And then when you're trying to engage in other activities that don't have that same type of stimulation, you can find it boring. Even though that activity, if you weren't so used to a digital stimulation, would be really interesting. And so I think that's part of where we have to acknowledge that I don't think that games are evil or they're bad, but certainly as a experience, they can be quite more or significantly more compelling, and they're designed to be significantly more compelling. And that can create a contrast between life in the gaming world and life in the physical world. And that's where some problems can begin to come about.
I agree 100%. And I'm one with the vocabulary that this one thing I feel like developers don't like hearing this. When the culture categorizes certain games as scam games. Scam games are games that incorporate a large amount of microtransactions in the game to pay to win. And we'll go deeper into this subject matter, especially with your experience in CSGO and whatnot. I'm sure you have a lot of knowledge around that. With that being said, this conversation that happens in the mainstream media, it doesn't get highlighted very much, but the conversation about games being designed to be addictive, do you, because in tandem, there was sort of this parallel conversation about a few years ago or a couple of years ago about how Juul, the e-cigarette company, had been designing their packaging, designing their coloring to entice more kids they wanted to make it youthful, make kids represent the brand, whether they start utilizing early or start utilizing later. Fortnite fell under some of that same conversation. So what is it that developers need to do in order to change the conversation? Obviously they can't make it it obviously doesn't make sense for their bottom line to make it less attractive, but how can they maybe add maybe parental controls that limit times internally, create a more healthy conversation around consumption? What do you have to say about that?
Juul's a great example. And I think Fortnite's a really good case study in even the difference between blue blood and red blood, right? So a game like Fortnite and a game like Call of Duty, Battle Royale modes, kind of similar type of game experience. The difference is one's a bit more cartoonish, Fortnite, and one is, you know, significantly more kind of like similar to real life, which is Call of Duty. Which one is a parent going to feel more comfortable with their kids playing? Of course, mm-hmm. It's Fortnite, right? And Fortnite's becoming like a massive marketing platform beyond just being a video game. And we're seeing a lot more of those examples coming in. I think FIFA is a really interesting example, specifically FIFA Ultimate Team, in playing the line to a very sensitive degree of being paid to win without being viewed in a similar fashion as like a lot of mobile games that are very much viewed as pay to win type games, and how that appeals to different player psychology. Now, how we prevent these problems, I think parental controls, sure, is nice, but most gamers I hear from who are struggling with excessive play are adults, 18 to 26 years old. And so parental controls, I think, from an industry perspective, is a nice talking point. And certainly it's nice because it feels like, oh, parents have more control to limit, you know, games. But adults are struggling. It's not just kids. Mm-hmm. And so what do we do for adults? Like, parental controls aren't going to work. I think that I like to use the example of Instagram. So on Instagram, there's different hashtags that are kind of like underground hashtags for suicide discussions. Hashtag Sue is a classic example. Now, if you open up Instagram and you type in hashtag Sue, a pop-up will appear, a prompt that says, hey, this is a known hashtag around suicide discussions. We're not going to restrict you from going into this hashtag, but we're just going to prompt, hey, are you in crisis? Do you need to talk to someone? Would you like to connect to the suicide hotline? Would you like to connect to other resources? It gives you the option in that moment. It's not restricting you. It's not censoring the hashtag because they'll just go to another one, but it's giving you a pattern interrupt. And I think games could do a lot to address this by even just implementing that sort of thing. Hey, you've been playing 16 hours today. Do you want to take a break? Instead of like, we're going to completely restrict you from playing, which, you know, China's instituting in a lot of ways, but just giving people more information about their play, giving them more information about the money they're spending, and whether or not that's in line with what they really want to do. And I think those sorts of features would be welcome. Now, a lot of games are not really implementing those because they're not yet addressing as an industry the role of excessive play and harm. And instead, the focus has remained on like, well, parents aren't doing their job to restrict their kids from gaming when, you know, as we know, it's not just kids that play video games.
Yeah, absolutely. And so this is something that esports in particular faces a massive regulation need in ways, but at the same time, the regulation sometimes causes more problems than it alleviates problems. So with that being said, we've been talking about casual gaming and the actual games, but when it comes to esports, and we talk about esports on the Esports Business Network, is if a particular individual, now this is becoming more popular given the circumstances with Booga and as, you know, the prize pools for Dota and things start to get higher and people start to have conversations like myself and people in the network talk about the opportunities within the culture of esports, not the industry. People start to see the money, okay? And kids are now at a younger and younger are starting to realize that there is a opportunity, a financial opportunity in playing competitive games. And while that seems sort of like a fairy tale in many ways, like the same as being a professional traditional sports athlete or being an actor or being any sort of form of entertainer, the thing is again, I mentioned a little bit burnout. So for these younger individuals that see a future in competitive gaming, it's not necessarily the kid that needs the advice. It's the parents. The parents need to know what are some of the obstacles that they should look out for that say the kid is over gaming, not spending enough time on his studies, not spending enough time socializing, becoming a, you know, a more engaged member of their community, both online and offline, and being more well-rounded. I think with sports, traditional sports, growing up, because honestly, I didn't really have this vantage point that I have now as an adult for esports. I was always told that I needed to be well-rounded, have volunteer work, have all sorts of things. But I don't hear that in the gaming and esports space. I don't hear you need to be you need to go volunteer, do Habitat for Humanity, you know, Goodwill, some form of just being well-rounded, like extracurriculars. And so I understand, you know, parents now are seeing big money, like $3 million that Ibuka won as an individual. What do you, like, when you start having conversations like it, about this subject matter of opportunity in esports, and parents say, oh, my kid's playing too much, or you know, but there's this opportunity. Like, how do you deal with that? It's sort of like a fear of missing out, an anxiety that their kid is like, is he really good? Is this something maybe he shouldn't, you know, maybe he should be, you know, reading books a little bit more or something.
I love the topic because I think it's so important that esports is leveraged as a platform to encourage healthy gaming, gaming being an opportunity to learn for personal development, professional development. And esports really is that platform where we're able to engage with kids or students in a medium that they're passionate about, that they are motivated by. And it's always significantly easier to learn something if you're learning it in a medium that you actually are interested in. And I was in Australia last year before lockdowns. I was speaking in Brisbane. And after my presentation, I had a parent come up to me and say, her son the night before had said something really difficult for her to hear. And what had been happening was that he's a passionate gamer who would like to pursue a career in esports. And when he, you know, was finished his homework or what have you, he would be working on gaming and working on developing his career. And his mom, after, you know, him gaming for an hour or two, she would always be on him about getting off. Like, okay, you've played enough, like time to go do something else. And he told his mom that he felt like she was killing his dream. And this mom felt it was really difficult to hear that. And his son or her son went on to say that his brother is out there, you know, 6 hours a night working on improving his cricket play. And she doesn't say anything, but yet here he is pursuing gaming and trying to make that a passionate career. And after only an hour or two, he's told to get off. And he felt like it wasn't fair. Now, a lot of kids will use this argument and frankly, not be very honest about it because they're just playing a lot. They're not playing very intentionally. They're not actually trying to make it a career. They're just like, one day I'll make it. But if you have someone who's playing and they're taking it very seriously and they are trying to learn, they are trying to improve, they are trying to study, it's a great medium. It can be a great platform. And I think that's the difference is, are you treating it as a career? Are you treating it like it, like you need to in order to be successful in it? Because frankly, the competition to be an esports player or to even work in esports is very fierce. There are limited spots available. And compared to traditional sports, if you're not 7 feet tall, you're not making the NBA. yet esports has no height requirements. So that alone, you begin to open the pool of available people to pursue the opportunity. And I think esports, from a learning about business, learning about marketing, learning about brand, learning about how you connect with people professionally, learning about how you improve at a game and not just play a lot. These are all different dynamics that you can engage in and you can support your son or daughter in that can increase the level of transparency and accountability about the activity instead of just, oh, play 16 hours a day and you'll make it, because you won't. But if you treat it like an opportunity to learn marketing or to learn business or to learn about how to brand yourself, if you treat it like how do you actually improve at a game, there's a lot of great learning opportunities there that can transfer to other areas of your life. Just like when I played hockey, we had a ton of different content that we went through, or encouragement from our coaches about leadership, just like you said, about volunteering, about becoming well-rounded, and about the fact that regardless of whether or not we made it as an NHL player, our hockey experience would make us better citizens, better members of society, better leaders in business, and more likely to be successful in other areas of our life. And it was that education, that encouragement, that and that skill building, frankly, that I now, I think just like yourself, look back on and say, wow, they were right. Hockey did make me a better leader. It has helped me a lot in business. And at the time, I maybe didn't see it, but it certainly came to fruition. And I hope the same can be done with esports.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, side note with it being said is that traditional sports do have a more developed infrastructure. So it's hard. And especially when the conversation does come up is esports sports, while it's growing exponentially, like very rapidly, the infrastructure isn't developing at the speed to which the conversation is growing. And that's due to like people just not knowing how to lead and how to organize in the space. Because it is a industry dominated by a very young demographic of individuals from earliest age of 4 to 20 in their late 20s. I mean, we don't generally see anyone over the age of 25 as a professional esports player, but you know, it is something to mention there. But I want to ask you about the you know, fiscal responsibility in this space, because once you do become an adult, there are a lot of things to worry about. And if you are, you know, if you weren't a player early on and you weren't the next Booga, but you maybe didn't grow up in the area to achieve that sort of success, but you've grinded and now you are getting the attention, but you maybe can't can't get connected with one of the more funded organizations in the space, and so you're kind of and the topic is really about gambling. I don't know, I'm going around about in this conversation, but esports faces a lot of issues with gambling. And so the fiscal responsibility is the question I have for you, because I see a lot of players right now and they come into this network and talk about how to balance spending into tournament buy-ins and what sort of how they should, you know, if they want to be discovered, they have to play, right? And it's you have to pay to play. This is in esports. It's intrinsic to it. Obviously, there are some there's some circumstances where you get into tournaments based off of some other reason, but this industry is dominated by entry fees, and so. So how does someone maintain the balance, and at what point should they consider maybe reducing their expenditures, and maybe think that this isn't, they're not cut out for it. I mean, that sounds terrible. I feel like people, that's really killing someone's dream. But at the same point in time, like, you know, reality happens when you can't pay your bills, essentially.
You have to treat it like a business, and any other business would be evaluating what your expenses are, what your revenues are, and making decisions that are informed based on the data. So for instance, like if you were spending hundreds or thousands of dollars of the money that you're earning for this podcast on ads to grow the podcast, like, well, are they working? Is your podcast growing? Are you seeing an increase to your revenue from the podcast growing? Or, excuse me, are you just seeing, you know, some more views, right? And are those views even views that you need or want need to develop? It's a very different conversation when you're evaluating the data, and especially when you're not emotionally attached to it. Now, that's very difficult, especially when it comes to sports or esports and being a player. But that's the data you have to kind of look at. And I think for players, it's crucial that they begin to treat their development like it is a business and really evaluating these different areas and being transparent about it. Now, investing in entry fees isn't always sometimes it can be good. But a good example is like if you win prize money as a player, well, it's not just did you win prize money. It's like, well, how much did you win? And how much have you earned this quarter? How much have you earned this year in the last 3 years? And really taking a longer view look at it, because it's easy to, you know, like attach yourself to, well, I won this tournament and I won prize money, but the prize money was $500 and that's all the money you've earned this year. And now you're spending full-time hours on it. Maybe it's not such a good idea. It's also important to encourage that esports isn't just about being a player. This podcast is a great example. You're working in esports, but it's a podcast. It's a different outlet that you can treat like a business. And if it was earning money, it could also be supporting maybe your efforts as a player. And I think for players, obviously, streaming is another outlet that hasn't often been available to more traditional athletes as a way to earn money and be able to fund a career. Now, of course, streaming and whether or not it's possible to make it as a streamer is a whole other conversation, but certainly very difficult. But there are other outlets to work in esports that don't have to be directly as a player. It can be working in events, working as a caster, working in a podcast like this. And I think if you're passionate about gaming, definitely take those other opportunities as well, either in parallel or as a primary focus. So you have to treat it like a business, look at your numbers, be continually evaluating them, be transparent about them, and know that ultimately, even if you make it in esports, your career is likely not going to last after 25. And 25 is like the beginning of your life. And so you need to have a plan for what are you going to do afterwards. And I think starting on developing those skills or building those professional networks now is important.
Yeah. And, you know, I know that we're wrapping up here, and I appreciate you for taking the time to have this conversation. I think the last thing I want to ask you about is actual gambling, right? So with gaming being an addiction, and I know there are transferable skills. Like I hear this, I attest that like going to the office is the same thing. If you're going to be on Excel all day, you're playing a video game. It's the exact same thing. Apples to apples of video games conversation. When people start getting into wagering and betting, I think the betting thing is more on the adult side, the conversation about some of the stigmas in gaming. And we could go into a whole nother conversation on the ethics behind wagering on children and all and these things and and what sort of impact that has on like a international thing level. But my question is about gambling and as it pertains to it's like the last resort. It's like you have way more than an addiction at this point, but gaming doesn't really have a crutch. Like if you have an addiction to cocaine, like there's a physical thing, you know, and it's one thing, right? Gaming seems to be like kind of not nuanced, but like they're just all kinds of different stimulants that could cause someone to use this word relapse. I don't know if that's even like an authentic way to define this, but when these stimulants come into your life, and maybe you're on the spectrum of you know, taking a second mortgage on your house to gamble on Fortnite World Cup or whatever it may be. How can people, what are some tactics that they can take to remove themselves from those negative stimulants? Like, I know a lot of people have been, you know, paying attention to the screen time on their iPhones, or like setting up some sort of screen time thing on their computers. But this is one of the things that I feel like is a conversation that isn't had enough about, like the deeper, harmful things that happen in esports and gaming related to gambling and related to overconsumption.
Well, esports is going to run into an issue over the next couple of years. It already is beginning, because so much of esports is funded by the gambling industry, and the number of streamers who are sponsored by the gambling industry, the majority of esports tournaments being sponsored by gambling industry, many esports teams sponsored by the gambling industry. And overall, like during COVID, esports betting has been one of the big quote unquote winners. So if you're involved in esports, it's very difficult to not be exposed or be working with the gambling industry. Now, just for someone out there, like if you're gambling to pay your rent, it's probably a bad idea, especially if you're looking to pursue esports. So, you know, that automatically is just kind of a statement I think that's valid to make. But if you're engaging in esports or you're engaging in gaming, being exposed to gambling is now almost a certainty. And you need to understand what the risks are. You need to understand whether or not you want to engage in that sort of medium. For me personally, I remember when poker was kind of all the rage, you know, maybe 10 years ago, I thought maybe that would be a good outlet for me that wasn't gaming, but I could like play poker and make money and, you know, have a full-time job. One of my roommates was a full-time poker player, and just engaging in that for a little bit, I realized it was so similar to a game for me, and it just came with so much risk that I decided not to pursue it. So I think everyone has to kind of take a holistic view at their life and really be evaluating what are their motivations, what are their behaviors, what are the motivations driving those behaviors, and ultimately, what are their values, and how do they want to experience the world? And if gaming is a part of that, fine. How do you want gaming to be a part of that? If esports is a part of that, how do you want it to play a role? And same with gambling, or same with really anything else that you're doing. Certain activities come with a heightened sense of risk. And we all have a different risk tolerance. We all have a different makeup that will cause us to be more vulnerable to some of these different risks. For me, as someone who is more vulnerable to being a compulsive person, gambling comes with just such a heightened sense of risk that I don't even bother engaging in it, period. Whereas for me, like watching an esports tournament and having gambling ads all over it is annoying, but it's not going to make me go and start betting on different games. I know myself, and everyone needs to know themselves too. And if you're struggling with gambling, you definitely want to reach out for help. There's a ton of resources online about it. There's a lot of different professionals you can speak with. And if you're younger, it's even more important that you take that seriously because your brain is maybe not developed yet. And you also are more vulnerable to risk taking. And so if you're a college student, gambling can seem very appealing, but it comes with so many risks that, you know, you have to make a choice of whether or not that risk is worth it for you or not.
Absolutely. And I appreciate all that insight. And I know that we're running out of time here, so I just want to give you the opportunity to let people know how they can contact you if they're going through some of these, if they're just even having the thoughts or dealing with some of these obstacles in their life.
You can reach me at gamequitters.com or at Cameron Dare on Twitter and Instagram. I also post a lot of content and sort of gaming trends on LinkedIn, so you can connect with me there. And for any professionals out there who are looking to learn more about gaming or gaming disorder, we have a 15-hour clinical training called Intenta, and that's available at intenta.digital. And thanks so much, Trent, for having me.
Awesome. Thanks again. And this has been Cam Adair of Game Quitters. You've been listening to the Esports Business Network podcast. Thank you for listening.
Hey, y'all. It's Trent Knox, founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. I want to say thank you for listening to this podcast. If you're finding value in the podcast, I would greatly appreciate it if you share the podcast to your network and write a positive review on your preferred podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, feel free to make a contribution to our working capital accounts on Cash App or PayPal. Our username is ESPORTSBIZNET. That's Esports BizNet on both platforms. As always, we'd love for you to join our community and platform at https://www.ebn.gg. You can take advantage of a free subscription to our bronze membership by following the directions on the homepage. Part of the bronze membership is access to our Discord server and private membership channels. The conversation only evolves with participation from esports entrepreneurs like yourself. We need to hear about your esports business to understand how we can move the industry forward as a community. You can also join the community by joining the Facebook and LinkedIn groups. An additional goal of EBN is to move the conversation forward on your preferred social media platform. So as a last note, don't forget to follow us on social media for current events, news, and other esports related topics. Follow and subscribe to Esports Business Network on social media. Looking forward to networking with you very soon.